Welcome to the Business and Leadership Channel. My name is Michelle Boulay, and I'm so honored to be a sponsor here at this amazing conference because it's my passion to help you connect to your own inner leader and let that transform the businesses and relationships you create. I'm a life coach and healer and an internationally recognized award-winning dance artist. And dancing taught me to listen to my own inner voice and let that guide me to my success. A very common thing that happens for business owners, creatives, and leaders is that you're so close to your next goal or breakthrough and then you stop. Doubt kicks in, worry, procrastination, fear, overwhelm, which kill growth in your business and creative process. So I'm giving a talk here on Saturday, October 24th, where you'll learn tools so that you can show up with clarity and belief in yourself and your ideas, consistency to keep showing up, and the embodied and intellectual understanding to move you gracefully through the challenges you'll meet as you grow, as you go for your goals. If you can't make it live, pick up your phone now, go to Instagram or Facebook, find me, follow me, and DM me the word success, and I'll send you the free resource I'll be sharing at my presentation. It's also in the show notes. However, I do recommend you attend live here or at my main stage presentation to get the full scope of what I'll be sharing to help you realize your creative dreams. And now, please enjoy this next presentation.
So, welcome back. Welcome, Peter. Peter is the founder of company Into Motivation. It is a coaching company and I would say consulting company as well. Peter is a motivator as far as I could kind of put it together. And as far as I see it, you are motivating people in different ways, in different media. First of all, as a coach in your business, then as an international speaker, and also as an international writer, I would say. Peter wrote two books. The first book that he wrote together with his wife is Finding Motivation Inside Yourself. And the second one is the Spiral of Superpowers. And since I read the title, I'm really kind of dying to ask you, what are our superpowers?
Well, there are a lot. There are 12. And they have to do with a lot with the body and the mind. And I really invite you to take a look at the book. So maybe I'll make some references during this talk as well to this book.
Okay, now thank you very much, and the spotlight to you, your really nice, well, I love the title of Leading by Following. I'm very curious.
Thank you. Well, thank you for being in this talk, first of all. And I would like to talk today about leading by following. And this is not only for, let's say, the leaders out there that are formal leaders for groups, but also for anyone who is a leader in any context. So if you are a father, a mother, if you are a friend, you are also a leader. And that's what I would like to talk to you about today. Because a lot of people, they know a lot, but then they have trouble how to apply it, how to influence others, how to get them along, how to sell, how to communicate. And that's the biggest problem. And the main metaphors for leading by following you can find in nature and in families. The first example I would like to give you is something that you all know, is these birds that are flying in the sky. So they are in a perfect V and they fly to the south or the north together. And depending on the wind, they all go to the left or the right. And it's really a beautiful sight. It's even so that the first leader, the formal leader, who has, like, let's say, the direction, is changing all the time. But now it seems that this first one is only doing the direction, and that is not true, because these birds are so much aligned that if there is some other bird in the line that is scared about something or gets something influenced by the wind, they will immediately all go together to the left. And that's a very beautiful mechanism. And that metaphor is actually applicable to any other context. Because if there would be a bird halfway that would fly completely the other way, everybody would follow. Unless the bird is not in rapport, as I call it. And rapport, therefore, is a natural state to be in. Everybody is in rapport on a daily basis with other people. You see it in birthday parties, in let's say in the supermarket, at home, and at work, and nowadays also online. And the principle of rapport is, of course, that people are connected to each other. Now, that means that they feel that they are on the same wavelength. So in people, you see that by the same body posture, for example. But also, people are in rapport when they have the same emotions, when they feel the same emotional state. And that can be anywhere. Even if you are watching some video or someone online and you feel their emotion, then you are in rapport with them. And in this principle of the connection, you see that there's a tendency to lead and to follow each other. And not necessarily the former leader. Anyone can lead to another level. That's where basis when there is natural rapport. And that principle is, of course, applicable also to yourself as a leader. Now, the problem with most leaders is that they start to lead by just going a certain direction, which is usually a certain goal. And often they forget about being in rapport. Now, I have a little bit of an exercise I would like to show together with Tamara, if that's okay. And Bers, I hope you can show both of us. So Tamara, if you could hold up your hands like this. Yep. Okay. And move with me, please. Very good. Yep. Perfect. Yeah. Very good. Usually you need a peripheral vision on this. Okay, good. Now stop. Now, Tamara, now you can take the lead. All right, stop. What happened, Tamara? What did you experience?
Now I experienced lots of connection with you, actually.
Okay.
Good. I was kind of focusing on you, and it was easier for me to follow than to lead.
Okay, it was easy to follow than to lead. Okay, did I follow you all the way with both hands?
No. No. I was disappointed.
You were disappointed. Okay, what were you thinking?
No, I was thinking whether I was clear enough. I start to think about the technicality of it, whether the frame was big enough and whatever, whether you see me or you don't see me.
Right. That. Yeah, and it's nice because I do this exercise a lot with leaders to show this basic principle of leading and following. And what I did deliberately, of course, is I followed you with one hand and I didn't follow you deliberately with the other hand to see what you were doing. Because this is a metaphoric exercise. And this, for me, is the core about leadership. This is actually, in the first time when we did it together with the hands, what was happening with the birds who are a perfect in rapport. Now, the second time, I deliberately didn't move one hand. And usually, I see different responses with people. So some people, they start to play around with me. They go like, cuckoo, and they start to, you know, move their hands and look at me and smiling faces and maybe even even seducing me to move the hands. And they try all kinds of different things to move my hands. Now, other people who do that, and when I stop the hand, they basically stop and they start to doubt themselves and they start to analyze everything, like the technicality, what happened, why didn't it move? Did I understand the question right? What was going on? And they really go inside to reflect on that, to see and analyze this. Now, the third type, when I do this, they go like, hey, what is wrong with you? They start to blame me for not following. Or they say very simply, you are not following me. And some of them even grab my hand and just, you know, they start to move this hand. And then a fourth type, as I call it, they look at me with the hand and they go like, will you please move my hand? And they try to be very nice and empathic. But the core of this exercise is that the only way for you to lead with this hand is to follow me. Now, and that is such a basic principle, but such a powerful principle that some people really need to think about it. What do you mean following me? Well, what I actually mean is that you stop your hand, just I stop my hand. And but I say, oh, but if I want you to move your hand, so okay, stop and make the movements maybe less quick or so more slow. But if I still don't follow, stop, go back. And this is such a big metaphor for people on a daily basis. You know, I was playing in a band for many, many years as a hobby, a funk and soul band, and everybody's in sync. I was singing and was playing the bass guitar, and of course we had horns, and we had the drummer, and we had a singer, and we had all these people in the band. And when a band is in sync, it sounds really beautiful. But when one wants to go more quickly, it's depending on the others whether they're following or not. If they are not following, then that person should come back and follow the rest of the band. If he or she wants to speed up, maybe the way to speed up needs to be more, let's say, with less speed. Now, and this principle of leading and following is applicable to all levels of leadership. So it starts with the body. So the body, as we are in this conference, is such a powerful instrument that a lot of leaders are not aware of their own body patterns and their own way of using their body. If you use the analogy of, let's say, leaders who are a certain types, you have leaders who are always full of energy and they're inspiring and they move a lot and they are upside down with their voice and da, 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 da. So they have an energy that you kind of like, yeah, but only you feel inspired to follow them when you feel also in that same mood or in that same need. Because if you're completely in your head and you're analyzing and you're thinking, what is this? They're too much for you. So these types of leaders, they need to calibrate themselves much more first on what type of energy they are in and also calibrate whether the people around them are in that same energy. Now, other are calm leaders, reflective. They think a lot. They reflect on anything. They bring everything in a calm and structured way. Now, that's really great if you have people who are also in need for that or if they are in that same mood. But if you have people bouncing, jumping up and down with a lot of energy, they want to go and do something or want to feel inspired or they just want to, you know what the purpose is of doing things, they don't need this calm, reflective energy at that moment. And the same goes for the ones who are leaders like, okay, let's do it. Action. They are very direct in their communication and also in their action, and they're very good at that. But if they are not aware from their own pushing, driving energy, and if it's not resonating with the ones around them, they're going to have a big mismatch. And therefore, the rapport is very much misaligned. And of course, if you are a leader that is all about, you know, connecting to the higher purpose and connecting to have teamwork and everybody being connected to each other and showing empathy to each other. But if people are in a completely different energy and they just want to go getting goals and achieving them, then basically you have a big mismatch as well there. And it's so interesting because that same principle of leading and following applies to the body. It applies to beliefs. It applies to energy. And the key word there is basically calibration for yourself. Why and how are you feeling at this moment? If you are feeling angry, for example, and that's also one of the misconceptions I noticed, for example, in a business leader concept, is that I get people in our trainings who say, yeah, well, I cannot show my emotion. Well, that is the biggest bullshit ever, if I may say it like that. Showing emotion is really key to be a good leader. And tapping into your own emotion, whether you're angry or sad or whatever, is really good to be that. Because when you are tapping into that, first of all, you will be much more congruent in your words, because otherwise it will be like, yeah, I feel really happy today, but you see non-verbally that it's not matching at all. But also, you approach other people with, let's say, an adult way. And that's also something that is really, really key in the principle of leading and following. For the ones who know something about the principle of transactional analysis, for example, transactional analysis is the principle where in psychology three roles are defined: the parent, which is on top, the adult in the middle, and the child below. And the key differentiator from that is how they express emotions and how they take responsibility. Now, I had a woman in the training once who said, you know, I need to share something with you. I have not only one child, which is our son of 10 years old, I have two, which is my husband. So let me explain. So she started saying, you know, I come home in the evening and I cook this, but we both work. I don't mind cooking. So I like it. So I don't want the one who cooks. And then I ask him just one thing. And so I said, John, can you put the garbage outside? And I'm cooking. And you know what he does? He sits behind his computer. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't even look up. He just says, mm-hmm, and then continues. And already my anger starts to go up here, right? So I ask again. I said, John, can you put the garbage outside, please? And again, he has this passive aggressive, very childish way of responding to me. He's just going like, mm-hmm, and he doesn't respond to me. And I'm so tired. I stand up and say, John, put the garbage outside now. And then still, he just looks one time, and then he does like this and continues. And so she continues this story to me, and blah, 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 blah. And so I'm like, okay. So I said, basically, I understand from you that your husband acts like a child. Well, you understand me, she said. Okay, good. I said, you know what you should do? No, she said. Stop being his mother the whole time. And I said it a little bit more provocatively than I'm saying it now. So what happened is that she started crying and that she walked out of the room and someone walked after her, and then she came back. And of course, I explained to her, I said, well, I was a bit rough, but that was deliberate. I wanted to provoke you in a way that I showed you what it is to be, let's say, a very much a parent to another person. So she said, okay, I get the message. And I kind of get more or less what is happening because this has been going on ever since our son has been born. And she was literally, because it's not only the body, because she was standing and he was sitting, but of course the tone of voice and everything was as if she was her mother, his mother. So I said, okay, if you want to continue this parent-child relationship, No, she said, I don't want that. I want a healthy adult relationship, because by then I explained, you know, the parent, which is the one that takes responsibility over someone else, which is the one that holds back emotions, the one that covers the emotions with the blanket. I explained the child that is just very explosive with emotions, or implosive, that doesn't take any responsibility. And they're both leading and following in a way that is just really one-sided. But the adult one in the middle, that's the one that take responsibility for themselves. And that's the one that actually expresses the emotions as they are. Some people think, oh, it's the adult is the one that expresses emotions rationally. Nonsense. The adult is the one that if the adult is pissed off, it's pissed off. And it will say that it's really angry. Because that's the most congruent way of expressing it. Because people will feel it. People will feel it. If you're angry, other people will feel it. You can try to be rational about it. Nonsense doesn't help to be rational about it. So first thing you do is sit down with your husband on the couch and have a talk about the emotional part. So, and in a way that it's so inviting that he's opening up. So either you need to be very vulnerable first, or you need to be so creating such an atmosphere that he can also express first. So whoever wants to go first, and my advice would be start with yourself. And once you've clarified that, once he has been able to express his emotions, then you can establish, let's say, some kind of form of understanding of each other's emotions. And then you can speak about the responsibilities in the household, for example, the garbage and whatever, but take it a little bit at a more abstract level. Now, this for me is such a typical example of where you can change the leading and following, because actually what is happening is that when you are following the emotions of the other person first, and you are when you are following, of course, not only your own emotions, but expressing them in a way that they are inviting for someone else, then you can be in the same level. And that takes rapport, because I always say, if you want to build rapport with someone that is angry, don't go like, calm down, because that's basically if the high hand goes like, and then somebody else is trying to say, oh, calm down. No, if somebody is really angry, you can go like, oh, really? Well, I can imagine this is really difficult. So you don't need to necessarily agree with someone, but you can tap into their anger. So without agreeing to the point that the other makes, it's okay, this must feel really, really upsetting for you. I can see that X, Y, Z. And then you might have the chance that you can calm them down and you can say, okay, let's calm down, but not just immediately, unless you have this really great rapport with someone. And that requires also, let's say, calibration to yourself. How do you feel yourself at this moment? Now, this is just so only on emotional level. Can you imagine on belief level, on any other level, that, let's say, it's really crucial to do that. Tamara, are there any questions in between already or not? Oh, okay, if you want to ask questions, no problem. You can do that anytime. So I had worked for a bank many years ago before I started this this company. And one of the things that I had was I had a boss that I really didn't like. Let's say I thought he was an asshole. So basically, I thought he wanted to take my place. And for me, I was, let's say, much younger. So other things in life were important. And I thought he was not capable as a manager and he was taking my place and I wanted to, you know, make promotion and so on and so on. So, and I was fighting in a way that my body at a certain moment said, "Dook, it doesn't work anymore." I had some private issues in the relationship as well. So that resulted into, let's say, a burnout. Now, what happened at that moment is I was very much fighting the dominance of this leader, of this manager. And for me, it was not a leader role. He was a manager and a bad one as well. And I thought he was just dominant, not empathizing at all with us, and particularly not me. And I kind of found it funny that there was a colleague of mine who didn't see that at all. But I thought, hey, let it go. And much later, I basically got the mirror myself, which is that I could only recognize the dominance of this person because I was dominant myself. So if I am only fighting his dominance, I first of all couldn't see my own dominance, and therefore I couldn't really, really empathize with his dominance. Now, that seems like a paradox, but it's actually really a contradiction, I would say. So it took some years before somebody told me that in my face, and I thought, oh, okay, yeah, maybe that's true. And that's a lot of, let's say, the issue of leaders is that they don't calibrate, first of all, themselves and where they are coming from and how they feel themselves before they start to express that to others. Now, in this case, you could have said, okay, but it was not my responsibility to be a leader. Well, if I wanted to change something with him, I needed to first follow him. If I wanted to influence anything from him on the way he was leading, I needed to follow and step into his shoes. I needed to empathize with his way of leading and his way of thinking and his way of believing. And also I needed to connect also with his body, which kind of like that was not in my, because I really hated the guy. I was really like disgusted with him. And building rapport with someone that you really don't like is kind of like, So therefore building a rapport always starts with, let's say, your own mindset, your own beliefs and taking responsibility. And in that sense, how you use your body in that way. Because you can be at effect, as I call it. And when you are at effect, that basically means that you think you are the effect of something or someone else. And the same for the leaders. If leaders are in a place where they say, oh yeah, but people don't take responsibility. Well, first of all, I would say, check and calibrate what you're doing yourself. If you're acting too much like their father, they won't take responsibility, because then you get this dynamic of parent-child. Child doesn't take responsibility. So the moment you have the parent role, they will not take responsibility. Check and calibrate what is your own belief system about why people are doing or not doing what you want them to be doing. And get rid of what I call the excuse book, the book of excuses of things where you feel like, okay, you know, things are not happening because of things outside of me. And this being at effect is something that people do on a daily basis, like, oh, look at this and blaming and then. But mainly when it's a structural issue, then you really have, let's say, a problem. Because in the end, the problem is not the real problem. The problem is the emotional state in which you approach a certain context. So how you deal with your own emotional state for any situation. And that requires first some leadership of yourself, calibration of yourself on where you are. Am I now at this moment at effect or am I at cause? You know, sometimes I use this metaphor to visualize being at effect and being at cause. And, you know, and sometimes do it like this. So if you look at this, what do you think this is? And then most people say, oh, I think this is a garbage bag. And I would say, no, this is a problem. And a lot of leaders are dealing differently with problems in a different way. So some leaders, they have their problems in their back. You know, they are either very naive in leadership, or they just don't see the problems. They just don't want to see the problems. So when people are asking, okay, or saying, hey, you have a problem, they will go like, I have a problem. Yeah, where? In my back. And they would just go like this, and they don't see it. All right. And that's one way of being at effect, is just being not pushing away these problems. Another way of being at effect is to make your, let's say, your problems bigger than they are. And it's people that in their body, usually they blow literally themselves up, but they can also blow up their own problem. Like, in the morning, they are thinking, how can I amplify my problem in order for people to see what kind of issues I have? And some people are really good. They just open the bag and they put some air in there, and then they have a big problem in 1 second. Now, still at effect. And some people, you see that really in their body. They have pain. For example, they have back pain, or they have other pains in the stomach. And basically, they still feel that it's because, I don't know, the pressure is too high, the stress is too much, the market is down, there's COVID, there's other things, my team is childish, whatever. Or even if you think about your own family, you know, for example, children are a great example. Yeah, they just do and they don't listen. Now, you also have the types, of course, who are kind of like half in the problem. They're like, kind of like, yeah, I have a problem, but the other one, no, I don't have a problem. And then you have other people who are in effect, and they basically are really inside of the problem. Now, these type of leaders, they basically are the problem themselves. And they're so much inside of the problem that, you know, sometimes they ask for help, help, and then they are helped, and they basically say, no, 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 I don't want any help. Because if they get help, they cannot stop complaining anymore. And then you have the type who is inside of the problem, and they can see the not problem, which is the rest of this universe, but they still stay inside of the problem. And this is also a way of being at effect, because basically, you are inside of your problem. You can see the not problem, which is the solution, but you still stay inside of the problem. He's getting out of my problem right now. And as a leader dealing with this, you can do a number of things. First of all, you could solve the problem, but if you are not in the capability to do so, you need to change how you emotionally deal with this. And that means calibrating your own emotions again. And that means asking yourself, how can I change the emotional state in which I'm in? How can I change my body? How can I change my emotional state? How can I change my beliefs for other people to start following me. Because being the example as a leader is so key, and people often underestimate how strong that is. You know, we had an NLP master practitioner training last week in Portugal, and one of the exercises was about hypnosis. Now, hypnosis is not just about hypnosis or being in a trance. No, this is about being in rapport, calibrating yourself, calibrating the others, using senses, using the right language, and so on and so on. So there's many different layers. And it was one woman, a leader, successful leader. So also she's getting good feedback on her own team. But when it came to some new elements, for example, this particular exercise, which was putting people like stiff as a plank between two chairs, she basically was a bit cynical and skeptical and went back to her own patterns on that. And what happened was the person who was there, she was still with this self-talk of, I think he's just faking it, or he's doing a pleasure with me. And I think probably he just does it because, yeah, we need to do this exercise. And the moment that we took him up and that he needed to sit back in his chair, she forgot to instruct him to relax the muscles so he could sit down again. So he just stood there. And I said, you need to tell him that he needs to relax his muscles. She said, oh, okay. And she was a bit, surprised. And then she started to give that suggestion. And of course, he relaxed the muscles and he could sit. Now, she was completely surprised by her own power. Now, why? She said, I first was skeptical, but when I made the mistake of not instructing him in the right way, I actually, then is when I started believing in this exercise. Now, and this for me was an example of someone that underestimated the power of how she was leading and how the other person was already following. And therefore, how she only discovered it when she was making a mistake, which is fine, of course. As a leader, you want to make mistakes, particularly in any role, whether you are influencing in a formal team or when you are, an informal leader. Because I truly believe that in this world, where we have so much knowledge, when we have so much, things, so many things going on, that we really need, I would say, not more leaders, but more effective leaders. More effective leaders who are able to follow the others. And by following, leading somebody or a group towards new ideas or a result or an emotion. You know, this is also applicable to, families. When you are in a family structure, when you are a father or a mother and you have kids, you are basically dealing with kids who want to do things and I don't want to do things, which is a very natural process. We have at home different ages. For example, we have a 5-year-old, Alicia. We have a 13-year-old, a puber. We have a 4-year-old. And they all respond differently to us. So having that flexibility to lead means that we need to follow every emotion that they are in. And when they're smaller, yeah, we can use tricks like the double mind, you know, something that in sales they do is say like, Alicia, you want to go to bed now or in 5 minutes? And of course she chooses in 5 minutes. But if I tell that to the 13-year-old, she's almost 14, she will say, I'm not going to bed at all, you know? So, and in that puberty age is very logical because they are forming their own identity. So they're not following at all. They're leading their own life. It's a very healthy way for someone in their puberty to not lead, basically, the parents and lead their own identity. Obviously, they want to have that sense of belonging. So they want to follow certain singers or certain groups or, you know, sometimes they want to follow the parents, but most of the times they don't want to follow the parents because they want to create their own identity. Now, when you are in a family or in a business context or with any kind of team and you want to become the leader, you first need to follow them. Following meaning that tapping into their emotional state and emotional, being. And that means, therefore, again, calibrating yourself. And calibration, so calibration for me is noticing differences. And noticing differences can be on someone else. So when you are communicating, calibrate what kind of influence this response has. When you are this leader who is like very extrovert with their bodies moving a lot, and you have people who are very calm and more reflective, a lot of times they miss the calibration of the, let's say, what is happening as an impact with people who are a little bit more calm. So calibration requires, let's say, seeing the subtle differences that are going on when you are communicating, but also with yourself. So what is happening on a daily basis with the differences in your body? What is happening with the difference in your subconscious and your conscious? Because the rapport part, the leading and following, is also a mechanism that is inside of our own system. And often people talk about the subconscious mind, but it's the subconscious mind body, of course. The conscious is just a little fraction of yourself. You know? So people also always think, yeah, okay, well, my subconscious is this, is my body, and my conscious is here. Well, no. Your subconscious is all of this, and your conscious is also all of this. You know, if I ask you now to become aware of your back, you will feel your back, and your back becomes conscious. And in a moment, in a minute or so, your back is back into your subconscious. Now, calibration is necessary for leaders to first calibrate themselves. What is the rapport between your conscious and subconscious while you are communicating? And obviously there are some, let's say, conflicts that you might have. You know, the old, my head says this and my heart says that, or my gut says this, but my ratio says the other. And aligning that means that you go and search for how can you build rapport again with your conscious and subconscious. So how can you basically be the example of following your body sometimes and following your mind sometimes? Now, and I can tell you that the body is usually, let's say, a bigger instrument and has much more information than your mind, which for some people is kind of challenging concept to, let's say, to accept. Any questions?
Yeah, if you want? I would like to kind of stop you there. Two questions. Okay. One is, what are some best practices to stay in rapport with a grassroots NGO with a global team on different time zones that is often feeling a bit overwhelmed?
So obviously we are now in an age where we are in a time where we are building, and I hope I understood the question. If not, then tell me. So building rapport online is let's say of a different type, because usually face to face, the bodies could connect and could have this energy. And now there is this, let's say, there is this gap. So that requires some practical things. So first of all, that if you are online, you really make sure that you are having this part enlightened, so that you have a light on here. Some people, they have the light from the back. They are looking as if they're in the witness protection program. Now, why is this so crucial? It's crucial because your face has more muscles than the rest of your body. So your emotions are expressed through your faces. So that's the first thing. And that's more of a practical part. The other part of the question, which I understood, is how do you build rapport with, let's say, people in different time zones and when you have teams there? Well, basically, you need to start changing the metaphor, but also the use of the contact moments. And if you're in the same time zone, you can contact each other more frequently. Even if you're abroad, if you're in the same building, it's even easier. But that means that I would spend, and we see that in companies as well, much more attention to just the human aspect. And that means that the agenda for meetings are more taken out of the online meetings as much as possible to do more via email. Now, for some, that's really a provoking thought. But what I'm trying to say here is that it's really, really important to connect with each other at a personal level. So simple things in a meeting is just sharing how you feel about how you feel at that moment. So, you know, what's how do you feel today? And do a quick round with each other on that. And don't be afraid if you have an hour to spend, like I said, 20 minutes on there, if before you spent 5 minutes on there. So anything that you can prepare outside of the meeting and that you can spend on rapport is really beneficial. So those for me are the, let's say, the simple best practices on how to build rapport and connections online in this new digital time.
And there is another question, and that goes about, can you repeat the list of good, a list for a good leader, rapport, and then follow, and then dot, dot, dot. Yeah.
The first part for me is intention. And intention is not a goal. So intention is about who you are and what you feel. And often I come across leaders who are, you know, particularly if they have a high red personality, if you know what I'm saying, that don't understand the concept of intention. An intention is who you want to be. You want to be the inspirer, the communicator, the pusher, the whatever. And that can differ from day to day. But sticking with one way of seeing yourself as a leader is a pitfall, because nowadays the world is changing big time. Your people are dealing with different things every day. So intention is crucial. And intention for me is also about, let's say, the feeling that you want to have. The second part is rapport. I spoke about that extensively. And the third thing is flexibility. Now, flexibility doesn't mean that you just need to adapt to everything that other people are saying, but particularly flexibility in calibrating your own body and mindset and doing different things with that. So really being the example of how you want others to treat you, and also the example of how you can deal with obstacles. So for me, these are key: intention, rapport, and flexibility.
Okay, thank you. And there is another one, actually, ask for a fix to a dynamic that the person describes. And she says, I'm realizing now that I'm in a mother role. And my team, I'm realizing that they're in a child role, despite me wanting them to be self-motivated, as well as not doing as much for them as I might have done in the past. That hasn't worked either. And now she's asking, I think it's she, how do I fix these dynamics?
Yep. If I were to be your coach, I would give you 100% responsibility. So there's no 50-50 responsibility. It's not like you have 50% responsibility and they have 50% responsibility. No. You are 100% responsible for this this result. Now, this sounds very harsh, but basically the hope is that there is that you just haven't found the key yet in order to really, really communicate in an adult way. And sometimes this is very small things. So let me give you a few examples. When people are going in an adult way, for example, if you have an older sister, younger sister, for example, or older brother, younger brother, there has been this dynamic for years already, whereby the younger sister and younger brother felt that the older one was acting like their father or their mother. So when you're just having a conversation at the same level and you do really your best to open up, just be aware that there's this very strong demand dynamic. So you need to be much more vulnerable than you are at this moment, but also much more vulnerable than you expect others to be. So vulnerability is key in there. How can you be vulnerable? Second is, what are blind spots? Sometimes people have, they really have this posture and this body of, okay, I'm going to sit now, I'm going to talk to you in the same way. But then they have this head that is tilting a little bit. Well, if this head is tilting a little bit and it reminds them of their mother saying, oh, goody, goody, just sit with them. I'm just exaggerating a little bit, but it can be the tilting head. It can be the voice that is just, right, Tamara. So it's just this little little anchors that people remind themselves of their old teacher, their father of, or their mother. So it's sometimes in very small things. And therefore, if you have a team like that, ask yourself, how can you really, really become the example of being vulnerable? But also, there are two types of parents in transactional analysis, because this stuff comes from there. One is the caring and the other one is the normative. So one parent is like, okay, don't do this, don't do that. Okay, healthy. I mean, if my young kid wants to cross the street, I say, oh, stop, don't do this. I love her, so that's why I hold her. Now, that same type of leadership you can have in companies or in teams. Okay, this is possible, this is not possible, don't do this, don't do that. But the other type of leader, which is also a parental one, is the caring one. Oh, just, okay, let me do it. It's fine, I'll do it, I'll do it for you. Oh, it's too much? No, I'll do it for you. Okay, that's the classic parent who says, oh, come here, I will take care of you. And often that is the one that is forgotten. But when you are displaying too much of the caring, if you take too much out of the hands of others, all with good intentions and love and whatever, you don't allow them to make mistakes, to learn, to take responsibility at all. Because, yeah, the only thing you do is take responsibility for the other person. The leader in itself, a formal leader in an organization, has the parent role by definition. Now, the trick is not to communicate like a parent. You are responsible for your team. You have that responsibility. So, and therefore, that is the formality of your role. But if you also start to communicate like that, then you have a problem. And some people say, yeah, but I've tried this. I really tried to do this adult thing and I was really an adult, but they are a children. No. If you are still facing someone that displays childish behavior, you basically are not adult enough. Unless you haven't tried something different. Let me give you one example. I hope I still have time, Tamara. I was doing a training once for sales and marketing professionals, and there were 55 people in the room. And it was about feedback, by the way. And it was really interesting. So everybody was talking and I was in rapport, and there was this guy in the back who was asking questions all the time. But I noticed that the questions were not like he was really interested, but he just wanted to be derailing the training. So he was basically the kid that was in the back of the bus on a school trip, right? So on the third time he raised his hand. So can I ask another question? I said, no. And I went in a normal way with the rest of the group. Now, if you're not in rapport with the rest of the team, with the other 55, that is a real risk, because at that moment I would have been done for the training that day. But it was not the case. In the coffee break, the managing director came up to me, and guess what he said? Well, he said, well done. Because this behavior was not only in this meeting, this behavior was with every meeting, with every team meeting. And now what I did was something different. I didn't go in the same adult level talking about emotions. No, I just went like an Uber parent saying, okay, shut up. That was basically my message. And in the normal way, I went with the rest. And he understood. Subconsciously, we didn't even talk anymore. When I walked around in the afternoon, I was saying, oh, is everything going well? Yes, everything's going well. So sometimes you need radical behavior to change the patterns. Right? There's a commercial here in the Netherlands on TV where there's a kid screaming and shouting in the supermarket. And the only thing that the mom does is don't do it, don't do it, don't do it. What do you think the child does? It just continues, right? So the only time that the child stops is when the mother goes and on the floor, ah! So, and then the child is suddenly like, because this is a mirror. And I do this with my kids as well, right? If one of the kids is like, ah! I go like, ah! And then they stop and they look at me, funny papa. So sometimes you also need to be having a radical way of breaking those patterns to give a mirror. And a radical in a way before you go back to adult, of course, before and after you discuss, let's say, more in an adult way, the dynamic.
There's one question, and it's a kind of asking more for the clarification for what you said at the beginning, that there cannot be shared responsibility. So someone is confused with the question mark. Could you please elaborate on that?
Yes. If you accept any shared responsibility 50-50, then basically you allow yourself to go back in the garbage bag that I showed you. Now, when I work with someone, a coaching clients, I give them 100% responsibility. If I take the example of the mother, of the wife with the husband that acted like a child, if I work with her, I give her 100% responsibility. But if I work with him, I'm giving him 100% responsibility, okay? So obviously, if I work with one, I give them 100% responsibility for their actions. Now, I this is a quote from my great father-in-law. The more knowledge you have, the more you know, the more responsibility you have. Now, if you are a leader and you know more, the more responsibility you have. So you took this job subconsciously or consciously, you have it now, you need to take the responsibility to 100% change whatever is going on. And if the pattern is still not changing in your team, you are not having, you haven't found the key yet to do something really different at level of your body, your nonverbal, your beliefs, your emotions, your behavior. It can be at different layers. So hopefully that clarifies, let's say, the percentages question.
I hope so. Well, at least it does to me in any case. Okay. And there are many thanks already because some people have to leave to the lecture. And you have another 4 minutes before I have to wrap up with the announcements. And so if you would like, there is another question, Q&A, just a second. Okay. Do you always need to have rapport with majority of a group to do a radical non-adult intervention like you just described? Yeah. How do you actually tune into the group and where do you respond?
Yes. Okay. Well, this is kind of a trainer question, but it's also, let's say, a metaphor for teams. When I'm doing a training, for example, I always have a peripheral vision like a horse. So that means that I don't always look at the person in front of me or the person here. I have this peripheral vision like this. And that means that I observe all the movements in the group. Now, the second thing that I'm looking for in a group is the informal leader. If I have the informal leader, then I know that definitely I need to, let's say, to influence that informal leader. And sometimes it's the one that is most verbal, but sometimes it's not. Sometimes it's the one that, if they are sitting like this, and then they sit and then they change their posture, and then suddenly I see in the group all these people with the same, they follow this person non-verbally. And that can be the most quiet person in the room. Now, and then I know, okay, so this is someone that is really having credibility in the group. This is someone that has informal leadership. And someone that knows and is probably able to follow the emotional state of the whole group. Now, if there's one very nice metaphor on this workshop, it's on YouTube, a video that's called Leadership Lessons from a Dancing Guy. So there's a mountain on a very sunny day. A lot of people are sitting in the sun enjoying, and suddenly there's this guy who starts to dance really in a weird and funny way. And then some people who are laying down is like, okay, this nutcase is not from this world, but hey, it's happy and let's enjoy the sun. But then another one comes in and he starts to dance in another funny way, not in exactly the same way, but he is nurturing them. And this first person is basically acknowledging the second one. Now, before you know it, 3, 4, 5 people join. And in the end, you see 500 people dancing and there's only one guy on his towel laying down in the sun, and now he's the outsider, basically, that was first judging the one that was dancing funny. Now, for me, that is one of the great metaphors for leadership and following. And the key challenge for us is to figure out where this following needs to be. Does it need to be at an emotional level? Is it at an energetic level? Is it on beliefs? Is it on the body? Is it on the mindset? And that requires a lot of awareness from yourself, which is basically the challenge for leaders. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that will be all. And in terms of question, there are no more questions coming in. So someone summarizes, the importance is the first follower then. So how actually the one who starts first, that's what you described. Thank you very much. So I would like to invite you now to take a moment for yourself to think what would be your tip top about embodiment, the leadership embodiment that you are going to share with us at the end, while I'm doing some announcements to wrap up the session. So I would like to actually remind all the attendees to buy the library for double less the price, and it will be 2 days, tomorrow after the end of the conference. I hope that you enjoyed. This is the last half day actually of the conference, and I'm definitely a little bit sorry, but you still have time to buy this, to buy the library, to give a gift to yourself, and maybe also to buy it for someone else. If you can't afford that, maybe you can afford a donation for the conference, and to be grateful for everything that you managed to acquire as knowledge in this conference. Also, please continue all your discussions in our Facebook groups, the general Facebook group of the conference, as much as the Facebook groups of individual channels. And I think that's all for this last closing day. So in order to close this excellent session, I learned a lot. So, and according to all the questions that you got, I think everyone who was here the same. Would you please then just close the session with your final top tip? What is embodied leadership for you?
Yeah. So for me, it's about being the example, and it's about being connected to yourself. So first be in rapport with yourself, with your emotions, and in that way be the example. So that's for me the biggest tip. And if that doesn't work, do something different. I love Einstein's quote, insanity is doing the same thing all over and over again, expecting different results. So do something different when something doesn't work.
Okay, thank you very much once again. There is lots of, in the chat, lots of thanks to a great lecture from your side. And yes, and a great interaction actually that people, with all the questions that people pose you. So thank you once again, and enjoy the rest of the conference for another half a day.
Thank you all. Thank you.
Thank you. Love the rubbish bag. Yes, the rubbish bag was also my favorite, the way you did it. Yeah, and our tech will end up the recording. Thank you.